Welcome, everyone. This is our real estate podcast, and today we're talking to Jason Watkins. So I'm going to give you a little intro to Jason so that you learn a little bit about him. But before I do that, I want to tell you a little bit about me. I do have an academy called the Kathy Benner International Academy. I go through five different lanes. I teach some on real estate. And that's the podcast that we're on today, is the real estate one. And in real estate, we talk about how to find the property, how to fund it, then how to fix it. Then you can either flip it or fill it. And then finally, what is your freedom number? How many of those do you have to do to make that day job optional? So I don't know about you, but buy and hold real estate is probably the most passive. I personally have commercial real estate and residential real estate. In commercial, I had five beauty salons for 25 years. And my claim to fame is that I actually purchased the actual real estate that my salons were in. Instead of having a shoebox full of rent receipts at the end of 25 years, I have five paid for properties. So that is my retirement. And so from there, I started investing in single family. And I now have some multifamily. And then in the residential side, I also do long-term, midterm, and short-term. So I'm pretty well diversified, and that was by design. I decided to do that. And thank goodness for those of us that most recently, we've gone through the whole pandemic era. And during that time, a lot of things fell off, like the hotels. A lot of trips got canceled and hotels were closing and a lot of Airbnbs closed because they were totally dependent upon that traveler, and all of a sudden events got canceled everywhere. But on the other hand, folks that still needed to travel for whatever reason opted to stay in Airbnbs instead of the hotels because they felt that it, you know, that they didn't have to touch as many surfaces. They felt things were cleaner. And so it really depends. Being diversified, I think, is the key, because that way, no matter what happens in the area that you're in, because all of, you know, they say about real estate, location, location, location. So no matter what location you're in, I think you can sustain yourself financially if you're a little more diversified. So that was by intent. On my part to get diversified for that reason. So it worked out really well for me. And I got through that whole time rather unscathed. There were some investors, depending on what their investments were and what areas they were in, that ended up, you know, they got upside down in their mortgages and ended up losing everything and having to start over. So again, I'm a very, people say to me, oh, Kathy, you're such a risk taker. Well, I describe myself as a very conservative risk taker. I always start with the end in mind, like, okay, if the worst happens, where's this going to leave me? And then I reverse engineer from there. So I always start with the end in mind and then reverse engineer it, which is why I'm so well diversified, I'm pretty sure. But anyway, so real estate, that's kind of my foundation. That's where most of my passive income comes from. But from there, I started writing because I always wanted to be a writer. So I started writing. So I do have the Ohio Writers Guild, and I do have a writer's lane, and we do a podcast once a month with authors. And I try to promote whatever their message is. I try to help promote that, because authors, sometimes if you're a newbie, and especially because as an author, a lot of times if you're self-published, there isn't anyone out there promoting your book except you. And so I try to help promote those books through the Ohio Writers Guild. And from there, we do have a Build a Better Business lane. And that's all about how to put together your funnel and how to create your offers so that whatever your passion is, you can turn it into passive income. And then we also do Fit as a Fiddle, which is a fitness. For those of you that know me, know that I am very much into fitness. During my 25 years in the salon industry, excuse me, I didn't have a lot of time to work on fitness, but now that I'm retired, I do. And so, and Jason, you can attest to this, over the last 24 months, I've lost almost 70 pounds. And so I have a whole thing on intermittent fasting. So that's all on the Fit as a Fiddle. Yeah. And we're interviewing a gal today at 4 o'clock. I have my Fit as a Fiddle podcast is today live at 4 Eastern time. And then last but not least, we have a network and connecting group, and it's called Coffee Connections Over Coffee, and it's all about building relationships. And that particular podcast, we never have an agenda. We just chat with each other on the podcast on whatever the topic of the day, kind of like the Hot Topics thing from TV. So we have a lot of fun with that one. So anyway, some folks told me that's their favorite one of all my podcasts. So I podcast every Monday at 12 noon. If you are registered for this one, or if you follow up and listen to the replay of this one, the link that got you into this call will get you into all of them. They all have the same Zoom link. And the only day that we do a double podcast is the third Monday, which happens to be this Monday, where we do the Fit as a Fiddle at 4 o'clock, because not every month had five Mondays. So I had to double up somewhere. So yeah. Anyway, so that's about me. So now I want to tell you a little bit about Jason. He is a man whose life is a testament to resilience, faith, and transformation. So from his early days as a young parent to welding, sewing, manufacturing, I didn't know that part about you, working for others in real estate and title, that's when we met, you were in title, Jason Watkins has walked many paths, each one building grit, humility, and insight. And now as a full-time Christian real estate investor, Jason is not only flipping houses and transforming neighborhoods, but also restoring legacies, properties, community, and purpose. He believes every house tells a story, every failure forges wisdom, and that every door God opens is meant not just for him, but for those he serves. Jason, thank you so much for being with us today. So
I appreciate you writing that. First off, I didn't write that. You wrote that, and I read that, and I was very, very humbled by that. So thank you for that.
Well, and because you know what? Because I know who you are. So that's, and again, I said I wanted to be a writer when I was like 12 years old. So I'm hoping I am arriving.
You did your research. You did your research. Yeah.
So I did the research, and this is what I truly believe about Jason. And so tell us about your early influence and your foundation. What were the early experiences like family, faith, work that shaped your mindset about your work, your risk, and service? How did welding or sewing manufacturing contribute to your real estate mindset? I didn't know that. And I'm like, how does that fit together?
It actually, in a funny way, I mean, only God could put all these pieces together for me, but God didn't come into my life until about 10 years ago. I didn't really have any sort of church experience or anything before that, other than going here or there when I'd have sleepovers. But it did instill discipline in me. So early on, I loved welding in high school. I took welding in high school for a course and I loved it. And so early on, I had a goal of like, well, I want to be an underwater welder, but like society tells you, go to college, go to college. You know, you're not going to survive if you don't go to college. So where I thought I wanted to be an underwater welder, I did what society told me I was supposed to do. And I went to college and go through that whole process. Needless to say, I'm somebody who doesn't really love school. So going to school when someone doesn't make you go. I love playing basketball and I played on the basketball team out there. Ultimately, grades started slipping and found out I was going to be a dad super early. So, and that moment was what forced me to take a step into the welding. That was my first real job. And it was because I had a baby on the way. You know, babies having babies. I recommend, going about your life before and getting established before you have kids. But ultimately, my children saved my life. And that's one of those pieces that, only God can do. And so I welded at the first place for about 7 years or so. And then 2008 came. It was a structural welding job. So I did a lot of fabrication inside a well or inside a building where I would have prints sent down to us. And then we would take the raw material, make the beams for the buildings, everything, send them out. And then while I was there, I would go up to the office to go check on prints or to ask questions. And I would see the guys doing drafting. I would see the guys making the drawings. That really interested me. When I was the first time I saw AutoCAD. And I thought, that's really interesting. And I would go up there then every day just to see, how do you do this? How do you draw this? What does it look like? Where do you get the information from? And so As I developed the interest in that, I asked the company if I started going back to school then to go get my drafting and design degree.
Okay.
So that's what my degree's in, is in drafting and design. So that's originally where the passion of the creation came from, of taking drawings to building something to, I never got to build the final product, but I got to drive by the buildings and say, hey, we did that. You know, like I built
Okay.
guts of that building. And then around 2008, so the company paid for half my school to go through and get, so
Sweet.
I got most of the school done. And then 2008 happened, where the economy crashed, to a small private company like that. That company went down. Ultimately, didn't had I stopped going to school, and then ultimately also separated with my wife at the time. Super young and two kids, and so kind of a weird time there. But then went straight to another welding job, and then eventually what happened was, that company went through layoffs too after about a year, right? In the trade industry and that type of industry, it's a feast or famine sometimes. Like, you're great, and then for a bigger company that doesn't really care about you, it's just layoffs. For the smaller company I had the experience in the 7 years with, it was, we'll do everything we can to keep you, and then until the doors shut. So that was an eye-opener for me in terms of bigger companies don't care about you. You're just a number in their database. Still do
Right.
your job like you're supposed to do your job, but they're not going to look out for you. Which ultimately, when they did the layoff, while I was on unemployment, I built a few decks for some people. One of the guys offered to, actually, because I could communicate and carry a conversation, he was like, I need somebody to run my diesel repair shop. And you have the ability to talk to people, to stay calm. And so that's where I thought, I need to get out of the trade. I got two little kids. I'm tired of this losing my job, or the fear of losing your job. And so I made the
That
move.
weighs on you. If
Oh my
anytime,
gosh, so
yeah,
much.
anytime something happens, you're thinking, oh my gosh, are they going to start laying off again?
Yeah, it does. So it really created the discipline to show up. Like, but that was a trade job. And I encourage young people to go get a trade job. AI can't take it, one. I can always go back to welding. I could always go buy a welder and start welding again. And I love to do it, just not as a job anymore. So when I was in the diesel field, same thing. I started getting the bill then. You start getting that bill. When I was welding, I started getting the bill for the school that I didn't finish. And so while I was still welding at the second place, I thought, man, I'm getting billed for something I don't even have. I didn't even finish this. And so I went back and they said, hey, if you go 2 quarters full time at night, you'll be done. And so luckily I was with my current wife at the time, and she was a godsend at that moment in my life as well, where I was working 70 hours a week welding, and then I was going to
Wow.
school full time at night. And so just to get the degree. So once I got the degree, I finished, then they did the layoffs. And then I went to a diesel company, which had nothing to do with my degree, but it was safety. It was safe, right?
And you got, but you still have the degree under your belt.
Yeah, I had the degree, right? I had my piece of paper. I did it. I finished it. Now I'm not paying for not I'm still paying for that stupid piece of paper. But from that point though, I took the safe job. I had kids. People told me my whole life I should be a salesperson. Why aren't you in sales? Why aren't you in sales? But I was safety. Like you said earlier, you're like, I'm a, what did you say?
Conservative risk
A
taker.
conservative risk taker. I've always referred to that as, I'm a penny slot gambler, right? When I try to be conservative on rehabs and ARVs, all that stuff, when I run numbers as conservative as I can. So I took the safe bet, and I did that for about 5 years or so, until I thought, it's time to use this degree and make a step. And so the
Okay.
first job I applied for with my degree was at a sewing manufacturer who just said they needed an AutoCAD tech. I didn't even know it was a sewing manufacturer. I thought it was an art
Okay.
shop, actually. And so I applied, and I remember getting the call too from my wife. Did you check your email? They offered you a job for, I think it was like $36,000 a year. And to us, I was like, whoa, look, we made
Yeah.
it. you know, and
Yeah.
but it was
Oh,
a
yeah.
step, it was a step into a career. And then so I moved into the sewing manufacturer where my whole job was to run the sewing manufacturing. So all the jobs, everything we made, and we made all sorts of different things. And I would get called to go out and whatever people wanted to make, I had to go figure it out. I had to go figure out how to make it, right? There, I want a cover to cover this, whatever. I would have to go out there, figure out angles, figure out how
Okay.
to draw this thing in a 3D, and then figure out how do I make that in a, how do I cut that flat and how do I draw it? And so for about 6 years then, I used my AutoCAD, I used the people skills, I used in a small company, like I was, my boss was the owner. She's there every day and she's who I meet with every day.
So you were a very integral part of the company at this point.
Correct. Yeah,
Yeah.
correct. And it was I was there for about 7 years, and that was, that's why I tell people to get with smaller companies. Smaller companies need people who are willing to care and to just really treat it like it's their company and work, because you learn so much more about the business side. You learn how to
Yes.
maintain different personalities and still get to the goal, still get to the finish line, get everyone across the finish line. And so I was there. I loved it. And then while we were on vacation, which we go same place in next week, in Texas, someone that I went to high school with had posted on Facebook they were looking for a project manager. Now, this is what I've been doing for the last 6 years. I just posted for what company, just because I was sitting there fishing. And he said,
Okay.
my company. And he said, I said, what do you do? And we've been kind of out of contact. And he's not a social person anyway, which most of those A type are not social people. They're just grow, grow, grow. But he said for his company, and he flips houses. And I remember 13 or like 10 years previously, me and my wife sitting on the couch watching HGTV thinking, how do people do this? How do they afford to have two mortgage payments? We can barely pay one mortgage payment. How are you buying another house and working on this house while going to work, raising kids? That's not possible. Like, this is fake.
Well, and of course, on the HGTV, there's always some big crisis, before the show
Yeah.
ends that costs them like three times as much. And you're like, what? There's no way
Yeah.
I would do that.
Correct. That's that fear. And so we just started talking, and at this point, I had come to Christ. I had a previous addiction history, and my whole, bloodline's got lots of battles with that. But it was, I was in my walk with Christ at this point. And he, I went and walked a few of his properties and was able to call out detail things. And just because when you're a broke father, you try to fix things, right? I fix things till I can. I YouTube it until it's broken, and then I have to call someone.
Yep, nope, I get it. I get it.
And so ultimately, he offered me the job. At the time, it was him and one acquisitions person, and he wanted to scale and grow. So we needed someone to manage rehabs. So I prayed on
Now,
it.
how long ago was this?
This would have been right after COVID. So I was at the sewing,
Okay.
like, so COVID didn't affect my work life because I was at a sewing manufacturing plant when the whole COVID thing happened. We were still essential, so we shut down, and actually all this stuff, like trampoline parks and things that we made, all that came to a screeching halt. But then we started making masks and face
Okay.
shields and like a, like all that stuff. So we kept busy through the whole COVID time, but this was after, like right after coming out of COVID,
Okay.
2020, 22,
Yep.
is sound about
Yep.
right?
Yeah, that's about right.
Right around that time. And so that's when he's scaling at this point, right? Now he's scaling. And so God had done a few things and moved some pieces around and gave me such a peace about that when he offered me the job, that I went to my
Now,
wife. Go ahead.
also, I want to jump in and say this for our listeners. Right after, as we were coming out of that whole pandemic era, a lot of folks did lose their jobs. A lot of folks did go into foreclosure on their homes. So there was real estate out there that was at rock bottom prices because a lot of the lenders that had to foreclose on some of these houses, they just wanted to move these houses off their books. And so it was a great opportunity, like for your friend, if he had some funds to start purchasing some of those. We were buying houses at that time. Wasn't quite as good as 08, but it still was a time that prices were low. Interest rates came down because now, the government was trying to help people start to purchase again, start to get the money flow, start to get the economy back to its normal state. And so housing prices were low and interest rates were low. So that's the perfect storm for an investor that wants to get into the industry.
And he had already been doing it for a while too. So, and then now it
Okay.
was just time to scale, right? Now it's
Yeah.
now you got system and processes and let's scale. And so we were a 90% fix and flip, 10% wholesale company is kind of where we sat.
Okay.
And then I managed about 150 flips for him over those 2 years that I was with him in Columbus, where I would then go into the house that we would acquire, create a spreadsheet, of all the materials, line up the contractors, order the materials, lay out the kitchen. So I'm still using my drafting and design. I'm still using that portion of it. Still have to use the people skills with contractors, as anyone knows. I mean, you got to work with them. They're part of your team. It's not like they're lowly
Right.
contractors. The house doesn't get renovated without your contractors. Treat them like your best employees and
And they
help
are.
them. Yeah, and
Yeah.
they are. Exactly. When you treat them like that, they perform like that. And so I had a lot of great experience, but like you said, in that time, we're bouncing back all the houses that were over budget. A lot of people, you'll hear a lot of people who say this. I've managed 150 rehabs and I've been over budget 148 times or 149 times. It's incredibly hard. But we were also incredibly blessed in that time that people were throwing offers 30,000, 40,000 over list price,
Yes.
no inspection. So we're seeing all these big bottom lines and high fiving. But then we sit down for our big meetings, our big team meetings, and we're like, all right, let's buckle down and be real. 125,000 of that is over list bonus money. Like that was not
Right.
included. If it wasn't for that, we made nothing, right? Like so it was a good eye opener into detail, and really looking at numbers and getting to know numbers.
But what an experience for you, because you're actually learning on somebody else's dime at that point.
So I got paid a base salary and then 10% commission on the flip. So, and in the time when I took the job, like I said, I had the piece that was there, but I knew I still had to tell my wife, and my wife is very detailed. I want to know the numbers. I want to see, because if it were up to me, we'd live in a box and we'd have nothing, because I'm terrible at managing money. So when I went to her and said, hey, I'm going to uproot our life and take a job that I have no idea how much money I'm going to make, could make less than what I'm making now. And at this time, I've been at the sewing company long enough that I've like doubled my salary there, right? I've proved my
Okay.
value. I'm her second in command.
Was that hard to make that transition though? Because you're like family now into this sewing company. You're part of the family.
I gave her, I think I gave her 6 or 8 weeks notice, like
Okay.
before I left. So when I told her, I said, I'll give you 2 months and I'll help find the people. I still have done drawings for them since. I still go
Okay.
back and see them, every chance. I still actually go see every company that I've ever worked for. I still go see everyone, at least once a year, and just go
Yeah.
check in on them. It's just who I am. I'm very loyal. And so leaving anything for me is hard because I'm loyal to that
Yes.
team, right? That I love the collaboration. And so, yes, that was extremely hard for me to leave something that I've been at for 7 years. But God put so much peace on my heart that it was so hard to deny that this is what I'm supposed to do. And when I came to my wife and told her, like, God, I think God wants me to take this job. And I remember I was actually sitting in this room that I'm in right now. And I remember sitting at her desk we had here, and she pulled her head up and she said, okay. And that was it.
Okay.
That was the kickstart or the initiation into real estate. And then obviously the blessings of getting paid to learn is remarkable. So that's a huge thing I would tell people. If you are really interested, don't uproot your life and just quit your job and start thinking you're going to make a ton of money flipping houses right now. First off, you don't get paid for 7 months. So have money to not get paid for 7 months first. Second off, join a team. There are so many real estate investors out here that need hands and feet. And that's the best way to learn. That's the best way to see the ugly, the stuff you have to deal with. You know a lot of the stuff too as well. I mean, there's a lot of ugly you have to learn to deal with and learn to deal with morally as well. So that's my,
Absolutely.
yeah.
Now, how long did you work for them before, because you're now on your own, right?
Yeah, same thing.
How was that transition?
So I was with him for about 2 years,
Okay.
and a title company that was here in Columbus was starting up, and they were investor focused. And since I had kind of shifted my role in the position, because when I started with him, there was him, one acquisition, and me. By the time I left, we had grown to 14 people in the office, plus
Okay.
all the virtual assistants. That we had cold callers, texters, and that as well. So it grew to a very big operation. In that process, I had to eat some humble pie in that, where we brought in a consulting firm that went through, did personality assessments on everyone just to see, are you right person, wrong seat, right person, right seat? What does your personality say for the general tasks you're doing every day? And when I got my personality assessment back as part of the leaders of this big, I was on the leader team, I guess, of this company. My personality assessment is the complete opposite of a project manager's. Contractors are going to love me. People are going to love me because I love them back, but I'm going to be over time, over budget, because details are just vague to me, so that's why I'm married to an extremely detailed person. But it made me have to eat some humble pie and say, am I the wrong person or am I the right person, wrong seat? And like I said earlier, that investor doesn't like to go out and talk to people. And a big part of growing is networking and finding and
Yes.
going out and shaking hands and going and looking at contractors' rehabs and calling other people and just really doing that part of it. And so so what we did is moved kind of more to the face of the company for him at that point.
Okay.
And so I did a relationship management where I was still finding wholesalers to source more deals and to find more deals. I brought in two more project managers and trained them how to do it that had the right personality assessment that says, I don't care what you think. This is the day we're getting it done. You stay till 9 o'clock. You agree that you're going to be done this day. Like, you're not leaving until it's done. That's not who I am to my core. So it's hard for me to be that. So when doing that, the title com I was out and about networking events. The title company saw me out and about and offered me a job and needed someone to represent Ohio and Indiana and Kentucky and go find other investors. And so same thing. It was like I prayed on it, and then I've never had anyone seek me out for a job before when I didn't apply for a job, wasn't looking for a job, didn't want to leave the team. But I went back to the investor that I worked for after praying on it. And I said, this company is really making it hard for me. They're putting this in my face. And, I just want to be honest with you and talk this through. I looked up to him quite a bit and in terms of who he is, how he thinks, what he taught us in this industry. And he said, that looks like a move you need to make with what I had started to part-time invest at this point. So since I worked in that group, I bought my first rental. He taught us how to do it. He taught us what it was and how to run numbers. And then a deal came through our pipeline that didn't fit the company buy box for the profit on the flip and didn't fit his personal buy box for rentals, but it was a good first rental. And so he came and he was like, hey, I'll assign this deal to you right now for nothing. Like, I don't have to pay the assignment fee. But you have to sign it right now. It's time to, like, crap or get off the pot now. And so I was blessed to have people behind me that I trusted that said, you're not going to lose money. This is a great first rental. And ultimately, it's the best rental we have still.
Okay.
So I signed it, and then I had to call my wife and tell her that I just bought a rental. So that was another conversation that happened there. So we had started part-time investing. And then since I was tagged and all the before and afters of the rehabs from the investor, the people who own my Airbnb now, that I own it, but the people who owned it previously were friends with me on Facebook and saw that and reached out to me. And
Okay.
it was a previously family property that was out of our family for 25 years. And so to have a chance to pull it back into our family. So I bought that in that same time period. So we were part-time investing,
Okay.
but at the same time, that was also an eye-opener for me of, yes, this deal came to me completely outside source, and it's a personal property, personal deal that I'm going to take. But in the future, me being who I am as a moral person, if deals come to me that are deals, I morally should be bringing them to the investor, and for him to buy because I'm his employee. And so it's part of the team. So that was also right at the same time I get offered that job. So now I'm like, all right, so morally, I can't keep taking more deals. I got to bring them to the person I work for, and they're waving this in front of me. What do I do? And that's what I went to him and talked to him. And he said, hey, the way you're moving, that's the best direction. You need to take that job. That's a good job for you. And he was the first person to tell me, hey, they're seeking after you. Negotiate your value, man. Go back and negotiate more money. He's like, I know it goes against everything of who you are. And so he pushed me to, and I did. I went back, negotiated a higher salary, and then ultimately went into the title industry for about 2 years.
Now, did you enjoy that?
The title
The
industry?
title? Yeah.
Oh, so much. Especially since I didn't have to do the title work, right? Like I was the sales guy. Now there's differences, right? Like
Right.
when you go to a lender salesperson, they have to do all that documentation and prepping of running all the numbers, putting it all together. I didn't have to do that on the title side. I had title curatives. My job was to go find the people who do multiple deals a month, figure out
Okay.
who they are, what does their
Which
team look like.
you were already kind of immersed in that at that point.
Yeah, I was already
Yeah.
kind of in Ohio, but now the challenge was, how do I go to Kentucky, Indiana,
Oh.
and find the same people that I've spent the last 3, 4 years here in Columbus already knowing, or the last year kind of meeting.
Yeah.
Events were popping off like every other day then too in Columbus, if you remember. I mean,
Oh, yeah.
you could be like, what do you want to do tonight? Let's go to a real estate event. There's one every night.
Yes.
Because everyone was making money back then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Title lenders, everyone was making money, and happy to throw events. And so the hard part then was to go out and then find other events to go to. And then I would have to go watch, figure out who's in the rooms, be consistent with showing up to these places, and then figure out who they are, what does their team look like, how's it laid out, who handles the deal. Do you have VAs? What kind of deals are you targeting? And then get them to use us for their title service. That was the goal of that
Right.
position, to build that relationship, trust, and be there for when, because as everyone knows, title companies are great. They always have, they're still people industries. There's still problems. Sometimes
Right.
problems are a big problem that can ruin the relationship, right? And they can be great on 100, but if you screw one up really, really bad, it's it. And it's on to the next. And so the challenge I had with that, with the startup title company and everything, and the great blessing part of that is I didn't have to do the title work, but I got all the angry phone calls, right? I got all the angry phone
Oh.
calls anytime anything went wrong,
Oh,
which
because you're the
I'm
front
their
guy.
rep.
That's
I'm their, yeah.
why they are using because they have a relationship with you.
Yeah. And now they know I'm not doing their title work, and they know that, but like I was used as their mouthpiece if during frustrations or if they need
Yes.
something now. So I got to deal with all those angry phone calls. I got to then follow up with, hey, did we get it resolved? What was the resolution? What happened and why did that happen? So I know for the future. And then so it's also helped me now when I'm closing on houses to know I need to ask for this by this date. I need to ask for this by this date. And besides Holly at PM Title, every title company I've ever worked with, I've had to ask for that information. If you're not a big dog doing multiple deals a month, you got to be prepared to ask the questions and say, hey, did you get that yet? Did you contact the lender yet? Did you get the
Well,
seller?
first of all, you have to know what the questions are, and that
Yes.
just comes with experience. And so what I'm hearing is that every single thing you've done has built on the thing before, and it just keeps building, and it has put you in such a sweet spot because you have all of this, I'll call it knowledge and information of the industry that a lot of newbies don't have because they wouldn't even know what questions to ask a title company.
Yeah.
But you do because you were connected with the title company for a couple of
Yeah.
years.
Not enough
So,
angry phone calls to know what questions to ask, right?
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, experience is, you've just fast-tracked your experience.
That's what I'm saying. I'm extremely blessed. And that's why I tell people, like, if you want to make a shift into the field and just be in the field and be around it. And you'll start learning more and more from there. I'm
Absolutely.
also a
That does.
curious person by nature. I like to know what people are, who they are, what makes them tick, and what they need. Ultimately, I do real estate, but I live to serve people. And like that's what real estate has provided me now, where I'm at currently, is it provides me the biblical truth of what I believe I'm here for, and that's to serve people and to be available and to go create, go love, improve your neighborhoods, but be available to stop and slow down and just sit with someone if they need it.
Well, and that's going to be my next question is how has your faith intermixed with your investing? And you just answered that it's all about, building that community and serving and helping and being there for someone, and that's huge. And that shows in you, by the way.
Thank you.
I can see that when you're just out and about. And for those of you that are listening, Jason and I met at networking events. That's how we met. And so
About 4 years ago, didn't we? After
And
we had it over at that stinky Pittsburgh Steelers bar.
That's too funny. Now, how many investment properties do you have now?
So currently we have three investment properties. We did have a duplex that we bought, and we bought it because everyone said, buy, 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 just go buy, buy, buy. And if it meets the 1% rule, don't worry about it. It's a good buy. So, and early on, we bought the duplex. So, we bought our first rental, then we bought the Airbnb. And I was like, oh, I want to get a duplex by the end of the year, right? Because that's what everyone's doing. And so, a duplex came up from a wholesaler and they're like, rents are 800 a side. They were selling it for 130. And I thought, this is 1%. Why are you not keeping this yourself? Ultimately, I bought it and it was. So it was a deal that by the time we got done with it, we would not have been able to refi out and get our money back, right? Or refi out at 0% just because of what was appraising around there. And so it was one of those moments for us that also we had to combat the emotion aspect of it, where you're fearful, where you're, I don't know what to do. And so ultimately, it led me to a point with that duplex where I said, the hell with it. Like, we're just going to list it and we're going to start a refi. And God, you're going to take care of one of them and it's going to be for our better. We're going to learn from it. And so ultimately, we ended up selling it and getting out of it. And I think we made $3,000 maybe total on the whole venture. But private money lender made his money. Everyone else made their money. And we learned a lot from that in terms of what to expect at the end.
So now with the real estate that you have now, how did you go about, and this probably you've answered already because of all of the different things you've done and the experiences you've had leading up to this point, but how did you know what systems you needed to put into place?
No, I still don't. I mean, we're still trying to figure that out. That's part, and that's one of our biggest problems right now is It was just run and gun. And I've said before too, real estate's simple, but it's hard. That's something that I sticks in my head. It's a simple process, but it's really hard work. And the hardest part of staying in this is to do your first deal, take your licks, and to say, I'm going to do it again. And then
Yeah.
to take your licks again and say, all right, we're going to get better and I'm going to do it again. And then just to keep doing it again is what got us to this point here. I'm sorry, did I answer your question there on that?
Yeah, you just keep at it. But again, with systems, can you share some of your systems, some of the things that you've put into place that someone listening to this podcast would go, "Oh yeah, I need to do that. I haven't done that yet."
One, I hate emails. I mean, emails and evaluating deals. A quick way to evaluate deals. First thing is do a ton of research on how to comp properties. That's the first thing you need to do if you want to get into real estate. And outside of going to real estate events is step one. Step two is learn to comp properties. Just comp them, ask questions, ask other people who are doing it. I'll give you my phone number here. I live to serve. So I mean that. I live that out. Text me, call me. I'll help any way I can. And then from that point, you just have to track your receipts, a good way of tracking your receipts. And so we actually built a Google, I have a Google form for both my offers and for my receipts. And so I built a Google form that goes to a sheet for both so that when a house comes up, I can just type in my Google sheet, what I think the ARV is, what I think my rehab is, and how many days. And then I can punch that in and it will automatically kick out my offer for me, my max allowable offer, and it will plug that property into a master sheet so that you can see if you've
Okay.
had it in the past. And then I do the same thing with my receipts. So I have a form that I fill out. Which property, who's it to, how much, a picture of the receipt, and then description of what it was, and then post it, and then it will go directly to the. So those two are really important up front. If you're just buying deals from wholesalers and on market, I would say
Okay.
the thing is being able to track the houses you're putting offers in and how you're putting offers in and just speeding that up, and then tracking all your expenses. Such a pain.
Now,
You love
let's
it.
go.
No, you're the queen of expense tracking.
Well, and I've got a super simplified system too. So,
Yeah.
my system's even more elementary than what you're doing with a Google form. I simply open up a bank account for each property, and I get a debit card for each bank account, and of course, I have my bill pay online for that bank account. And so, no matter what I do, I either e-check to pay it, or I swipe my debit card if I need to go to Lowe's and buy stuff for that particular property, and it all comes out of that one bank account. So at the end of, and then I don't keep track of anything. I just, everything goes directly to the bank account to the property that it's for. Then at the end of the year, I just go into the bank, my online banking, and I just print out a report January through December. And I put it in categories. It says, what kind of report do you want? And I choose, I want a category report. And it adds up all my insurance payments, all my property tax payments, all my maintenance expenses from Lowe's, and gives me totals. And those are my totals that I transfer over to my Schedule E, and I'm done.
Nice. And you do this for your flips too when you guys do, because you're doing some flips right now as well, right?
Yes, I do it. Every property simply has its own bank account.
Okay. And then
And
do
I
you
let the
flip
bank,
the bank
I let the
account after you flip the property then?
Well, after I flip it, I can reuse the same bank account for another property.
Okay.
Yeah, once I'm done with that one, then I can reuse the bank account.
Okay.
Yeah, because and again, I hesitate. I'm using the Huntington. And the reason I like the Huntington is because they don't care how many personal accounts you have. So I'm just using a personal bank account, so I don't pay any fees for the bank account. So
Okay.
I'm just, and all it is, it's just an accounting division. That's all it is. It's just a way to keep track of my accounting. So I don't have to do any entry. I don't have to log anything. I don't have to put anything on a spreadsheet. I don't have to do QuickBooks. I don't have to balance anything.
It's a huge. We're at the point now that we've been discussing we feel like we need help in our, now that we're doing this full time, we did one flip and then now we've got four going on, right? Four flips going on right now. So there was, we're definitely feeling this point where it's, we need some more help. But the bank account laughs when you say that, you know, because you're waiting for some of these houses to sell. So
I get it.
I know I've had this conversation with you before where I'm just thinking, I know I need help, but I don't know how we're going to get there or afford like what that looks like. So that's been a big prayer for me lately. What does that look like and what does he want next for this real
I
estate?
get it. And that's kind of where we were because I, you know, Mark loves airplanes. So he's off today doing airplanes. And so I pretty much handle all of the real estate and we have 30 doors. And I do all of the self-management. I do everything on an online program. I'm using Inago. I don't know if you're using
You
a
have
program
30
like that.
doors, but like, didn't you only have like seven 2 or 3 years ago? Then you only have
Yes.
like seven doors, 2 or 3.
Yeah. I have 30.
Good for
And
you.
so I'm handling all of that myself. And so I have 30 bank accounts, literally.
Oh my gosh.
One for each property, and so that way I don't have to do any accounting because again, like you, I was either going to have to hire someone to kind of do my entries because there just isn't enough time in the day, and then you just feel like you know you're wearing all the hats. You feel like, well, I'm painting the walls and now I'm doing the accounting and now I have to run to Lowe's and you know and pick up more materials, and you're like, there just isn't enough of me to do all of that. And
Managing rent
so,
became a lot harder when you realize you're doing all of it too. When you're not just doing just the managing of the house and then going home at night, and now it's all the insurance, all the notice of, hey, you missed the email that we need a picture of the trash can. So now we canceled your insurance policy, you know,
I
and
know. I know. So it's all about systems. And so for me, what works for me, for those of you that are listening to this, this is this, as you can tell, this is always the struggle part when you're starting to scale. And so for me, I like to spend at least an hour each morning. I just make sure that I answer any of those emails that I don't miss those, you know, where the insurance is going to cancel. So I spend an hour each morning and I just go through the emails and get that done. And then all I have to do is monitor the bank accounts. I don't have to do any accounting or any triple entry ledger or anything like that, or balance out the QuickBooks, or I don't do any of that because the bank does all of my accounting for me. It's kind of a done for you system if you do it the way I do it. And so that way all I do is just make sure that I have enough money in the account to cover whatever, you know, whatever I need to buy that day, for whatever property. And the only downside to my system is sometimes I want to buy stuff for more than one property. And so I do have to break it out at the cash register at Lowe's. And I go, I've got three orders. And the girl's like, really? And I'm like, yep, I got three orders. And I already, this is house one, this is house two, and this is house three. And then I use three different debit cards or whatever to check out.
Well, and
But
regardless, like I still have to do them in three orders. If I'm buying stuff for three houses, it's still three separate orders. Just I use the same credit card, right? I'm like, all right, this one's Hill.
okay.
This one's Greyfriars, this one's, but I'm still using the same card, and it's just the card for flipping, not rentals.
All right, I got to show you. I've got my purse right here. I got to show you this
Oh my
because
God.
you know when you get your debit card in the mail and it's got the sticker on it, it says please remove the sticker. Yeah. Well, I don't. I actually put the house number
On the sticker.
on the sticker, and so whenever I'm shopping and I go, I, you know, that way I know by house number, I know which property it is.
Well, at least you have a purse. It's a lot of cards to fit in my pocket.
Well, and now again, I don't carry all of them. I
Yeah.
only carry the ones on the properties I'm working on. You know, several of them, they're already rented and, you know, I don't, you know. And then if I have a vendor, if I have a contractor that comes out, oftentimes I get to pay them online and I can pay them with an e-check or I can click through, you know, on their online invoice or whatever. And so I
Yeah.
don't have to carry those cards with me.
Someone told me to start using Venmo because like I generally pay contractors with Zelle, but they said switch to Venmo because you can put your credit card on Venmo or one of them and then run it through your credit card for the points instead of just sending them like the contractor's cash, like Zelle cash each time. And so I thought, that's a good something to try.
I don't know if it's Venmo or the Cash App, but one of them, you can have as many credit card or debit cards as you want, and it'll
Nice.
say which one do you want to pay out of. So my system would still work there because I could pay it out of the correct bank account.
Well, and you need to switch to Home Depot too, just because they're
Yes.
better.
Oh, well,
Yeah,
I do purchase from there. But anyway, you get the point. So it's all about systems, and it's whatever. And everybody says, well, what system should I use? Whichever one that works for you is the one you should use. And
correct.
so
And don't go
try
buy everything. Don't
right.
go buy everything. Just get what you need right now. That was what the mistake I made when I went full time was listening, go buy everything. Get the website, get the phone line, get this, get that. And then, $20,000 later, you're going, whoa, what just happened? Like, what is all that marketing money? Where did it go? What did it get us?
Yes. So for me, it's been super simple to just, use my bank accounts to do my accounting. And everybody goes, Kathy, you never seem stressed. And I'm like, that's because my accounting is done for me. That's probably the biggest thing that everybody complains about, because all of a sudden it's tax time and you're like, oh my God, I got a shoebox full of receipts. Now I got to sort this all out and get it all on the correct Schedule E. And my bank accounts sort that out for me.
Nice.
And what really saved me, and for those of you out there listening, there is a ton of these programs. So research, and again, just pick one. Don't overanalyze which is the best one. Just pick one and stick with it. But you could use Buildium, you could use Inago. Gosh, there's a bunch out there.
We used Hospitable for our Airbnb,
I use Cloud Beds,
and then we
which
also
is
use apartments.com for the rentals. So those are
okay.
the other ones, the other systems that we use as well.
Yeah, and I use Inago for the rentals, and I use Cloud Beds for the short term. Same thing. They do the same thing. If you compare them, and you can go in online, for those of you that are listening, you can go in online and you can say, compare short-term rental programs, online programs that I could use. And then four or five will pop up, and you can look and see which ones have features that you would like. And choose one. And I remember when I was trying to choose for my short term, there was Hospitable, there was Cloud Beds, there was Guesty. Gosh, there's I don't know, there's maybe 10 different ones. And I was like, oh, which one to choose? I don't know. What should I do? And I was analyzing it to death. And finally, I started in
Got
on one.
paralysis.
Yeah, and I started entering my stuff in on one of those, and I remember I kind of got to a stopping point where I got a little confused about something, and I was like, oh, I'm not doing this. This is too hard. And so then I went in another one, and of course it brought me right up to the same stopping point. So I said, all right, Kathy, you're going to have to figure that out. Whichever program you use, you got to do that. So finally I just picked one and went with it, and once I got across that finish line and got everything uploaded and got all of my channels connected, it changed the world for me.
Oh yeah, it really does.
Yeah. And so systems are so important if you're going to scale. Now, you talk about restoring more than homes, legacy, community, impact. What does legacy look like for you?
Legacy means to me what you said earlier is kind of that's it for me. I don't care about money or anything like that, but how I live this planet, how I interact with people, that's really my legacy that I want to leave behind, is that, I love people. That's what we're here for ultimately. And then outside of that, I want my kids to see that they can bet on themselves and it's okay to fail. It's okay to miss. It's okay to go back and start again. And, for me, like I got into the real estate full time. One, the two, two period, the 2 years I was with the title company was really dark years for me and my family. And so I didn't do any investing really in those 2 years because it was all focused on my kids. And so ultimately, I was available in that having a sales position where I'm remote. So I was available for my kids anytime they needed me. But once that dark period ended, next day they eliminated the position at the title company. And so There was no heads up, no warning or anything. I didn't know this was coming. And so it was my moment of a little bit of panic. I got to go find a job. And then having a spouse like I do to say, hey, this is God, like this, we're cleared a path now to go do this. You don't have to worry about the kids. You don't have to worry about a job. Now it's just time. We got a little bit of a runway. So go bet on yourself. I've never done it. And so having a spouse that would support me to push me and to lift you up is,
Well,
everything.
for some, yeah, someone listening who wants to follow a similar path, like how you're juggling, the job, the family, and all of that,
Yeah.
what mindset do they have to have?
Gotta have a patient mindset. You gotta have a problem-solving mindset. You can't get overwhelmed by the problems. I tell people a lot of times I try to plan a day, but my day is determined by the first phone call from a contractor, the first big problem, which
Yep.
is not a healthy way to run a business. It's not something that is scalable and repeatable for a long period of time. And to be realistic, be prepared for gaps in getting money in, right? Like we're posting pictures of these houses and that, and it's very nice to go out and get the pat on the back, like, man, it's so nice seeing you guys crush it. And it's you and I tell them, hey, it looks like you're just seeing a house get rebuilt. Like there's no money coming in my paycheck for the past 7 months. We've got houses listed, but that's, there's ups and downs in this. And if you think you're going to get into it quick and just get rich, it's not gonna, it's not how it works. You got to put the time in, and then
Yeah.
eventually it starts rolling. And so,
I remember my first one. I just had one, and you're like, oh, I did it. I bought one. I'm on my way. And then every time the phone would ring, it would be like, oh gosh, I hope it's nothing serious because I had no bank, I had no reserve. I thought, I hope it doesn't need a new roof or a new furnace because we're talking thousands. And I'm just collecting the money and paying the mortgage. I'm collecting the rent, paying the mortgage and the property taxes and the insurance, collecting the rent, paying the mortgage, collecting the rent. And like, no, don't tell me it's a roof or a furnace because I don't have any money to do that. And my reserve account at the time, and you'll probably appreciate this, and maybe even you've done it, I don't know. But my reserve account was my credit card. Because I thought, if I have to put a roof on this house, or if I have to put a furnace in, or if I have to do a major repair, I'm going to have to put it on the credit card and then just, pay it off, with that interest. And it wasn't until, and for those that are listening, this is huge. It wasn't until that year number, and I'm going to guess, this is different for everybody, but I'm going to guess year number five seems to be when you finally enter the magic kingdom. Because somewhere around year number five, you have two or three of these instead of just one. And it's not likely that all two or three are going to need a roof at the same time. It's not likely that the two or three are all going to need a furnace at the same time. So now you've got cash coming in, and only one of those might need a major repair. So now you've got some reserves because now you've got some cash flow. It's all about cash flow. So somewhere around year number five, things start to relax a little bit.
I would say, so I always tell people 3 to 5 years, like buy your
Yeah.
rental. It's not going to make you in. Don't treat it like a 401k and all the money that comes in just stays in the account. Don't use it. Don't think about it. It just stays there and screen your tenants yourself.
Yeah.
Screen your tenants and make sure you
Yeah.
put your tenants in. But yeah, that's
Yeah.
it's and we so we're at year 3.5 right now. Let's call it year 3, 3.5 is kind of where
Okay.
we're at. Where our first rental actually makes money. We still don't take any of that money or do anything with it yet, but that one mortgage is getting paid down. We've only had two tenants in the 3 years, that we've owned 4 years that we've owned that one. Yeah, we've been on that one for 3 or 4 years, but we've only had two tenants, which that is the other thing that makes you make money is keep a person in there for 2 to 3 years, and then you'll actually
Right.
make some money on that turn. And then our Airbnb was actually probably our best purchase in terms of it doesn't cash flow right now, but it has probably close to 400,000 in equity in it. And so that's one that we're also paying 9% interest on our mortgage payment because we refied out when rates were at 9%. So that one, there's light on the other side. There's light in a couple years on that one where that one looks like it'll potentially start making some good money on the
Yes.
cash flow side too.
And that's also something that I want our listeners to understand is sometimes if a deal's not cash flowing right now, you start to tell yourself it was a bad deal. And I'm here to tell you that time will turn those deals into good deals. Because when you look back, when I think about my mom and dad, and when they bought their first house, they really struggled to get in because, they were spending, like we're spending today. They were spending a big chunk of their paycheck trying to get into this house, and it wouldn't have cash flowed if they were renting it out. I mean, they put everything they had into getting a house that they wanted. But now I look at what they paid for that house, and I'm like, oh, holy moly, if I could buy a house for that.
Yeah.
So those deals that weren't good when you bought them in 5 to 10 years, you're gonna look back and say, wow, I'm glad I got that at 9%. I remember in the 70s, which I'm a lot older than you, Jason. In the 70s, when I bought my first house, we were thrilled to get our mortgage at 14%. We were
Really?
thrilled. We were thrilled because rates had gone up to 19.
Oh my gosh.
And they came down to 14, and we were so excited to get our property at 19%.
He puts things into, little
Yes.
bit, humble yourselves a little bit, I guess, when you get all freaked out about where it's at
Yeah.
with
So
rates now.
don't get too upset about that. You can always refinance. Again, you've got to have good records. So get your accounting in order, and you got to have good records so that you can leverage some of that equity down the road because you can refinance later and bring the rate down. You can pull cash out. You can leverage
I
that
kind of
property
wish I would have
for
held on to the
free.
duplex. I'm at the point now that I'm past the emotion aspect of it, I kind of wish we would have kept the duplex out in Lancaster. But I'm also glad I didn't have to deal with the tenant issues or driving out there at that current point of where I
Right.
was. Well,
No, I get it. I get
yeah.
it. Yeah. And so it's all about perspective. So I really appreciate you being on, Jason. This has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for sharing
No
with
problem,
all
Kathy. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. And I'm humbled when I'm asked to come on these things because I'm not making money, a ton of money, hand over fist. I'm not rich. I'm just out here trying to learn and meet people and do the best I can. So by all means, share my phone number. You have my phone number out there. Reach out if I can ever
Go
help.
ahead and give me your number.
Yep, it's 614-561-3737.
There you go.
Perfect.
Perfect. So, Jason, thank you so much. And I will see you this week at the coin.
Possibly. It's tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
I've had a lot of 9 o'clock nights lately, and my kids have been
Okay.
eyeballing me. So I laid the groundwork of, hey, I have the early event that's tomorrow I might go to. I'll be back before you go to bed. So we'll see how they
No,
are
I get it.
tonight.
It's all about balance. I understand
Yeah.
completely. All
Thank you
right.
so much.
Thank you. See you soon.
That's it.
Bye.